Good afternoon, everyone. So heavy metal contamination of soil is significant because of the deleterious effect they can create on the environment. In fact, during the last decade, a lot of research has been focused on heavy metals and their contamination. So there are some metals like zinc and copper, which are actually nutrients and are required by the body at certain low levels of concentration. But at higher levels, they can be toxic to the body and create harmful effects. And there are others like lead, cadmium, mercury, which are toxic even at very low concentrations, and they can produce various carcinogenic and toxic effects when they are present in our body. Heavy metals in soils can occur both naturally or they can be generated from industrial sources, like smelting, mining, electroplating, or from the chemical industries. Their contamination in the soil is significant because they are not biodegradable. They tend to bioaccumulate and they remain in the environment for thousands of years. The Environmental Protection Agency has actually regulated these metals and their organic and inorganic compounds because of the harmful effects they create on living organisms and on the environment. These facts limits the cleaning up of these kind of hazardous waste sites all across the country and, in fact, all over the world. More than 60% of the US EPA National Priority List sites are actually heavy metal contaminated sites. So the site where this research has been conducted, it is a EPA Mid-Atlantic Superfund site. It is located in the town of Spelter in West Virginia. It's in Harrison County of West Virginia. It is a zinc smelter plant that was operational from 1910 to 1972. So the zinc ore was brought here and sintered here, and during this process, a lot of waste materials were generated, and they were not disposed of very carefully. They were actually dumped along the back and along the sides of the plant, which resulted in a huge waste pile. It is about like 100 feet high and covering an area of about 20 hectares. And in this pile, we can find a huge amount of zinc and other contaminants like cadmium, lead, copper, aluminum, calcium, iron, arsenic. So this is a pretty bad place. The West Fork River, which runs along the western side of this plant, is also contaminated from this mining operation. So this site, the soil, the water, everything is contaminated here. So this is just a picture of the site, and this is the huge waste pile that I was talking about. This is the smelting plant that is not operational now, and just across this pile, I collected my samples from here, and as you can see that there's a good bit of residential community here. There's a playground where children play, then there are a lot of houses, people living over there, and a lot of people have actually reported health-related problems. So Dr. George Flowers from Tulane University, he conducted an initial investigation on this site looking at the concentration of toxics like arsenic, cadmium, copper, as well as zinc with increasing distance from the pile. And as we can see that as we move towards the pile, the concentration increases. In fact, for toxics, it's around the range of 3,000 to 6,000 parts per million, while zinc is as high as 15,000 parts per million. So this point, this pile represents a point source of contamination. When I sampled this site in 2008, the zinc concentrations were around 8,000 to 9,000 parts per million. Lead was between 800 and 900 parts per million. Cadmium between 90 and 100, and copper around 200 parts per million. So with this high amount of concentration of metals in the soil, the residents of Smelter, is it at risk for the residents of Smelter? Because that would depend on the chemical state and the oxidation state of the in which these metals are actually introduced into the environment. So it is very important to differentiate between the bioavailable forms and the resistant forms of these metals in this soil. So with that thing in mind, this the objective and purpose for this project was to fractionate the metals associated with different soil fractions using some kind of chemical extractions and then assess bioavailable fractions based on these chemical extractions. But in nature, bioavailability to a lot of extent would be controlled by the plant metal uptake, how much of those metals are actually taken up by the plant from the soil. So those were the two bioavailability options that I tried for this part of the research, and then tried to relate whether the chemical extraction bioavailability could be related to the plant uptake bioavailability. Is there a relation? Can the chemical extractions mimic what is happening in the actual world? So I have been talking about bioavailability. So bioavailability is the availability of these metals in a chemical state that can be taken up by the organism and they can be a part of the metabolic pathway. These bioavailability assessments are usually done to protect the human health as well as to protect the ecosystem, the terrestrial ecosystem and the aquatic ecosystem. So the chemical extractions that we do to assess bioavailability, they are popularly known as the sequential extractions. So I have used the Tizier method, modified a little bit according to the needs of this experiment. Two types of soils were used, the contaminated soil, which is the soil that I collected from Spelter, and there's an uncontaminated soil, which was collected from the Monongalia County in West Virginia. It belongs to the same soil series, pretty much have the same texture, but the metal levels are significantly lower. It is a clean soil. So the first two fractions from this extraction scheme, which is a soluble fraction and the exchangeable fraction, that is what we call the bioavailable fraction, which is denoted by E1 in this study. The next three fractions associated with carbonates, oxides, and organic matter, that's the intermediate fraction or the E2 fractions. And the last fraction, it delineates a residual fraction. So it is said that metals in these fractions are quite safe and they usually don't make it their way to the ecosystem and are not of risk. So when we look at chemical fractionation data from this study, we are mostly, for this part of the study, we are mostly concentrated around these red blocks, which would show the bioavailable fractions. The green block is the intermediate fraction, and the blue one is the residual fraction. So for lead and copper, we see that most of the metals is associated with the residual fraction. For lead, we see a little amount in here for the uncontaminated soil, but again, these soils have so small levels of total lead that even 5% would not be around 0.1 part per million, so that is not a big risk here. In case of copper, around 5%, this chemical extraction shows that around 5 to 8% would be bioavailable. But things start looking different when we look at zinc and cadmium concentrations. You can see the red blocks going increasing in length over here. So for zinc, around 15 to 20% of it is bioavailable, and for cadmium, around 40 to 45% is bioavailable in terms of these tests. So the chemical extraction tests will show that zinc and cadmium are the most bioavailable ones, followed by copper and lead, which are not that important in terms of bioavailability. So when we do bioavailability measurements in plants, three model plants were chosen, which were the radish, the carrots, and the spinach. They were grown in different ratios of contaminated and uncontaminated soil. The plants were harvested after about 10 to 12 weeks, and the tissue concentration, the root, stem, and leaf concentration, were measured by a nitric acid digestion in the CEM microwave. So when we look at metal uptake data in the first model plant, radish, we see that in radish, the highest amount of lead is seen in the stem, while zinc and cadmium is the highest concentrations of this is seen in the root. Now, here, if we think about human bioavailability versus ecosystem bioavailability, the zinc and cadmium results could be fatal because most of it is concentrated in the roots, and roots are the edible parts of these radishes. And lead is mostly in the stem. So in terms of ecosystem bioavailability, this might not be important because most of it is concentrated in the below ground parts of the plant and it is not getting translocated from the roots to the stems to the leaves. When we look at carrot, it is in the roots that we see all the highest concentration for all the three elements, both lead, zinc, and cadmium. So here again, in terms of human bioavailability, this might be significant because carrot roots are showing a high concentration of all these three elements, and it's not getting a whole lot of it is not getting translocated in the above ground parts of the plant. When we see in case of spinach, this is important both in terms of human bioavailability and ecosystem bioavailability because zinc and cadmium are present high in the leaves. And again, human bioavailability is definitely affected here because leaves are the consumable parts of the spinach. The lead is mostly concentrated in the roots. So ecosystem bioavailability would be higher since it's, again, in the above ground portions, we find high concentrations of cadmium and zinc. So based on these experiments, a bioavailability index was calculated, which is the ratio of the plant tissue concentration. Plant tissue means the root stem and leaf, everything added together, to the total concentration. This would be more of a plant or ecosystem bioavailability index, because we are not taking only the human consumable part over here. And this is definitely a function of the plant species, as we can see in a minute. So here is a bioavailability index, and we can see, I've listed the result for the 100% and the 50% contaminated soil, and we can see that across all the species, the trend is similar. Cadmium is the mostly bioavailable, followed by zinc, followed by lead. And again, this differs on plant species. So radish would have the highest bioavailability index, and then the spinach, and then the carrots in both these levels of concentration. So in conclusion, when we try to compare the bioavailability from chemical extractions, the data that we got from chemical extractions, with the bioavailability from the plant uptake model, we see that the chemical extraction actually underestimates the bioavailability for lead and zinc. It is underestimated for across all the three species, while for cadmium, it is overestimated. That result is also similar for all the three species. So estimation of bioavailability is by chemical methods is actually a crude approximation. We can approximate like which metals would be bioavailable, but when it comes to actual plant metal uptake, a lot of other factors are also playing their role, like what could be the organic acid content, what kind of microbial processes are taking place in the soil, what kind of complexations are going on between metal facilitators over there and the soil. And then again, we have the question of ecosystem bioavailability versus human bioavailability. So residents of Spelter according to these data, they are at a risk of consuming, if they grow those plants in their backyard and consume these plants, they are at a risk of getting some toxic effects. So that question also has to be remain in mind. So the future part of this study would deal with what kind of mechanisms are actually taking place regarding the uptake of these metals from the soil to the plant, like what kind of mechanisms are going in there. And then if we leave the human consumption side apart, can these plants be used as some kind of tools for remediation? Questions?
Okay.